You are listening to the Punk News Podcast on Danzig's birthday. Today, the most holiest day of the year, June 23, 2014. Punk News Podcast. This is the Punk News Podcast, the week of June 23, episode number 202. We're still in recovery mode from the gigantic episode number 200. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and here with me is Reviews Writer Mark Little. Mark Little, you were at episode 200, and you continually changed your hat during episode 200. Why did you change your hat during episode 200?
I changed it because you called me out on wearing a hat because I'm hiding my bad hair day or bad
hair. I thought it was a cool hat, though.
Yeah, and actually, you know something? I've got to get the name of that hat again because I totally lost it.
Italian stud hat. It's like a real thing.
Sweet. And then I tried to go being more org, so I put on my Cobra Skulls do-rag and then went back to the regular hat again. So, and I'm wearing that hat right now just for you, John.
Fantastic. And also with us here is interviewer Chris Barrett. Chris Barrett, you were not at episode 200. Why were you not at episode 200?
I had last minute adult stuff. I had to work on this application and got told I had to tweak my professional resume and we're working with someone with that. So I had to try to become a better adult, and unfortunately it got in the way of me joining the podcast. So I've heard many good things about the podcast. So look forward to checking it out again. And sorry about that. But I'm here. Well, that's what matters.
Being an adult is overrated. And also with us here is managing editor Adam White, who was the centerpiece of episode number 200. Adam White, how are you doing?
Last minute adult stuff is going to be the name of like a really sultry lounge act that I put on.
Ooh, spicy.
Yeah.
So we got tons of email and
best band name ever.
Today's podcast is going to be kind of long because we're sort of playing catch up because episode 200 we didn't really talk about news. Episode 201 we sort of talked about news. So we got news to catch up from the past 2 or 3 weeks. We're going to run a little long today, but that's cool. Next week we'll really be back to the tight, fierce, mean podcast. Also, I'm not going to read email this week because we got tons of great email, including an email from Mark, not Mark, a little different Mark, in which Mark continues the transplant wars. And if you know, if you've been listening to the Punk News Podcast, we've been going back and forth with Mark for 6 years on the merits of the transplants. So expect that battle to continue next week. But in the meantime, episode 200, boys, I had a blast. It was ramshackle. It was almost falling apart the whole time, but almost everything went off as planned. What were your guys' favorite episode 200 memories? Because honestly, I thought there was a lot of special stuff that happened on episode number 200.
I'm totally shocked that you managed to pull, you know, actual musicians in and played on the show. Like, not even because, like, you know, wow, you actually made it happen, which, hey, kudos to you. But the fact that you were able to coordinate that, like, musicians are hard. It's like herding cats, right? So
you tell me.
Yeah. So yeah, I. Anyways, Mark, I cut you off there.
Oh no, it's okay. I mean, for me, the biggest thing, I think John and I mean, John probably knows this because we've talked over the last few years about this band, but I'm a huge Inferno fan, and to have Jack doing taking over at the beginning and doing an old Inferno song, by the way, a classic Inferno song, that was amazing for me. I really, really loved that.
Yeah, that was super special. I don't know if the listeners are super Inferno fans, but the very first World Inferno single is what's the name of this, their opening song they always play?
Opening song they always play is Tattoos Fade.
Their first single is Tattoos Fade. The flip side is a song called Nothing You Begin. It's nowhere else except for the super rare 7-inch single. And I don't know that they've never played it live, but I've seen World Inferno live 15 times. I've never heard them play that song live, and it was special because Inferno has had like 50 or 60 people go through it. But on the podcast, we had the two original Inferno guys. We had Jack Terrycloth and Scott Hollinsworth. And together, live on Punk News Podcast number 200, they played Nothing You Begin, which is a super rare, super special thing, which just goes to show how awesome they are. But the grand irony is I was so busy coordinating things behind the scenes, I didn't even actually listen to the song, and I didn't realize they played it. And I was so – like, after the podcast was over, people were like, oh, my God, they played Nothing You Begin. And I'm like, they did? And then I felt bad because we did a short interview with them, and I didn't ask them, why do you do Nothing You Begin, or say, thank you for doing Nothing You Begin. So I was so embarrassed.
No, that was really, really cool. And I think it's especially cool to see that the original keyboard player is back with the band or playing with the band right now. The last time I saw them, about a year and a half ago, when they were down here in South Florida, he was playing with them. And I think maybe the fact that Hollinsworth is in there with him, it might be a big reason why he was able to play that song.
We had lots of special moments. I also liked when Crazy in the Brains played in a cornfield across.
That was great.
I'm usually anti-technology, but I thought it was super cool. Technology is cool in that it let a band in like North Carolina play in a cornfield across the street from KFC live on Punk News Podcast. It was so awesome to have Eric Peterson of Mischief Brew there because he was actually running out the door to a gig while he was playing, and he did a upcoming unreleased song, which was super cool. And then Joel Tannenbaum had some ex-friends there, Joel Tannenbaum of Plow United.
Yeah, the Plow United was great.
And he did an upcoming unreleased song too. So it was a super awesome night. And also, Adam White actually gave a pretty open, revealing interview. Adam, is there anything from the interview that you thought might shock listeners?
No, I was expecting to like have to deal with a bunch of Buzz Media questions that I'm not actually qualified to answer. So like, woo, I totally didn't have to do that.
One thing Adam White said that was very interesting, and I thought it was quite brave of him to say this, it's like, what is the purpose of punknews.org? Because, I mean, people can get news directly from bands via Facebook and Twitter now, so Punk News as a news source might not be as valuable as it was, say, 8 or 10 years ago. So Adam White says the future of Punk News, maybe it'll continue being a news source, maybe it'll morph into something else. And I just thought that was quite frank and an interesting point to make, Adam.
We're old and slow.
That being said, so that was Punk News Podcast number 200.
And strange.
You can watch it live on YouTube, but we'll probably be doing a post about it. Well, actually, it'll be up by the time you hear this. So anyway, I highly recommend checking out Punk News Podcast 200. It was a blast. And Punk News listeners, thank you for listening because you are what makes this possible. Let's get the Punk News Podcast on a roll now. And this was quite a divisive statement, I guess. Here's what happened is Brianna Collins of Tiger's Draw, she was playing a concert with Pity Sex. And what happens is during the show, a guy jumped up on stage and tried to kiss the lead singer of Pity Sex. That's a girl, or maybe one of the lead singers of Pity Sex is a girl. He didn't do it. And then during Tiger's Draw set, he jumped up on stage and kissed Brianna Collins on the cheek. And then I guess he got pulled off the stage. Brianna Collins issued a statement. She says, it is never okay to touch someone without their actually, let me read her whole statement. Last night at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, someone came on stage and very forcibly tried to kiss me and actually did kiss Brittany of Pity Sex. I actually got it switched then. So the girl from Pity Sex got kissed. Brianna Collins did not. After another person from the tour was kissed while taking a photo. This tour is the first time something like this has happened for me, and I definitely feel responsible to say something. It is never okay to touch someone without their consent, ever. I feel so upset and violated as the others who this happened to. Touching someone without their consent is not only upsetting for that person, but it is also a crime. We all need to respect each other's space, whether it's someone in the band or someone crowd surfing. I just want to play music with my friends, and I shouldn't have to be worried whether or not every person stage diving is going to do something like that. I don't want to come down to having saying that there's no stage diving allowed at our shows, but if stuff like this keeps happening and I feel unsafe or uncomfortable when we play, I don't know any other solution. So please do not ever touch, kiss, grab someone that has not given you consent to do so. You are not entitled to that no matter what the situation is. Be a decent human being and keep your hands to yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easy thing to agree with. Admittedly, I do listen to that band, Tiger's Draw. I don't listen to Petty Sex. I've been to their shows in New York since it did happen in Brooklyn and at that venue. I happen to like that venue too.
Were you there at the show?
I was not at that show because as much as I do listen to them, the shows now have their fans. There are some fans in the crowd for them that are just a little too much, if I could put it that way.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
They don't. I don't know if it's. I don't know if it's that they don't get out often, but it's just that everyone tries to find a weird and opportune time to stage dive, crowd surf, or do something ridiculous when they get on stage. So I don't know if this guy was dared to do this, or you know, or just wanted to be, you know, to show off in front of his friends or whatever. But whatever it was, it's not something that actually surprised me that it happened here, especially because of the crowd that's they kind of have like a fervent crowd in this region, and they just seem to kind of find a new way to do something that's more over the top than the next. So for it to come to this level, it's sad, but it's also not surprising. I mean, I'm not saying it's everybody, but I'm just saying there's a few people that just continually. You know, whether it's like to get up with like some hardcore band T-shirt to like Petty Sex and Tiger's Draw, and they're doing front flips off the stage for these bands. I don't think it's necessary as well. So it's just that type of behavior that seems to be a pattern at their shows now, and it's not good.
Are they like a really wild band live? I saw Tiger's Draw once, and they were a pretty sedate band.
No, they're not. That's a funny thing. They're not a crazy band live. They're to me, if this was a different time, I feel like, you know, people would just kind of be like bobbing back and forth and kind of like in a haze. And you would think they would be with this music, but, they stage dive like crazy to this band. I don't get it. I just don't get why people do that to this band. They're not that type of band. Or Petty Sex, who's even more, who's kind of shoegazy and kind of, you know, some noise and some ambience here and there. Not the type of bands that require stage divers or crowd surfers. That's the story, and I'm sticking to it.
You know, I'm not really familiar with either band, but I have to say that I've never been a fan of being touched myself personally. I mean, going to punk shows and all that kind of thing, you're going to get bumped too into everything like that. But as far as somebody aggressively coming after me and touching me and trying to do something, especially somebody I don't know, I would find that uncomfortable. So I can only imagine an artist that's on stage being confronted with that kind of thing would be very, very uncomfortable, especially somebody that's in a touring band and doesn't know whoever's jumping up there and hasn't seen these people before. I'm totally on her side. I think that really people need to kind of check themselves as to how they behave with other people.
Can I connect one more point? The other thing I was thinking about was also the recent articles that come out about being the only girl in the band. And as someone who kind of was practicing in a band with a few girls and then was in a band like back in high school with a girl drummer, you know, I didn't think twice about it at the time. But apparently, as like, you know, bigger and touring bands, more established bands in the scene, it does seem to kind of be an issue for some people. I mean, just in terms of that, there seems to be issues surrounding it, you know, undeservedly so. And I feel like with Brianna in that band, there's just something about some inappropriate teenagers that they always talk about her in a certain way. I always feel like when I've seen them, I overheard a person or two just saying something really inappropriate about her, which isn't necessary because she's just in the band. You
what do you mean? Do you mean like, oh, she's hot, or like, or like, I'd like to bang that chick? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, kind of like, you know, kind of not looking at her as just a part of the band, but just looking at her as like, whoa, you know, like she's got a keyboard. Oh, she's gonna do that. You know, like just stupid. Like, just think of like stupid meatheaded stuff to say about a girl. And that's what I've mostly gotten, like, the vibe and heard things along the lines, especially the, oh, she's hot, man. You know, like, what do I got to do to get her attention or something? You know, something like that. So, yeah, that was the only connection I can make with that as well.
I'm really trying not to, you know, half listen to this conversation as I read some really bizarre comment threads on Punk News about this story and then start responding to the comment threads on air, because that would be completely without context. I'm having a really hard time understanding how anyone, and it might just be one very vocal person in our comment section, is taking issue with what Brianna said. And there is an argument that is being made, and it's not the popular argument, so I don't know why I'm giving it more air than it needs, I guess. But there's an argument that's being made in the comments that, you know, this is punk rock, and it's supposed to be wild and crazy and not safe, and, you know, having to go on the internet and release a statement because someone kissed you is, you know, they call it entitlement, which is totally bonkers. You know, there's... for, I guess, a few reasons. First of all, you know, we have the internet now, so we can go on there and say things about things that happened to us, and it's not a statement. She didn't go and, like, you know, stand in front of an American flag on the steps of the courthouse and release a statement about this. Like, she's, you know, they posted it on their website because we have, you know, the ability to do that in this day and age. So it's not a, it wasn't a statement. She wasn't out screaming for attention because this happened. You know, something fucked up happened, and then she went and she commented on it, which is, you know, a thing that we can do. And I don't think it's being, you know, it's not being entitled. It's not being over safe. It's not, you know, trying to take the danger out of punk rock because you don't want people touching you without consent. I don't know. I saw that comment come up, but I'm sure it's only one or two people that were even arguing this, maybe one. But I can't believe someone latched onto that.
Well, you know, let me play devil's advocate here, because personally, I'm on the fence. I'm not on my devil's advocate position I'm about to make. But I don't think the person that hit, like I actually think Brianna's comment was quite reasonable. And you can't argue with her comment. You shouldn't touch someone that doesn't want to be touched. You know what I mean? That's obviously. The devil's advocate position, I would say, is that the audience itself is overreacting. They're like, the guy that kissed her was promoting rape culture. I don't think the guy that kissed her was acting maliciously. I think he was just doing what people do to the Beatles, you know, like
agreed.
Girls would kiss the Beatles on the cheek all the time, you know, and I don't think there's anything sinister behind it. And I think right now in punk rock, we live in an era, you know, the past 2 or 3 years where people love to throw these big, heavy terms at things that really don't apply, like rape culture. I don't think kissing a girl on the cheek at a show innocently like that, it's rape culture. Should you do it? No, it's lame, but it's not rape culture. At least I don't think so. And if I'm wrong, let me know. I mean, like, I'm willing to hear arguments on both sides, so you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. I think there was a bit of overreaction. It is a punk rock show. It's lame to touch people that don't want to be touched. But is it, I mean, is jumping up on stage and kissing someone the worst crime in the world? No, it's lame, but, you know, just throw the guy off the stage and say, yo, that's lame, don't do it, or maybe kick him out of the show. But I wouldn't say it's rape culture or anything like that. But, I mean, if I'm wrong, let me know. I don't want to get crucified for taking that stance. If I'm wrong, send me an email, let me know why I'm wrong. And I don't mean, like, John, you're an asshole. Like, explain to me why I'm wrong, because I haven't seen a compelling argument as to why that's rape culture, if you will.
This is one of these things that may have been better solved if someone would have just punched this dude in the nose afterwards.
Well, I don't even agree. I mean, I would normally agree with, like, if the guy jumped up on stage and, like, grabbed her behind or something, I would say punch him in the face. But I think he was just trying to pay homage. I mean, obviously he wanted to kiss her, but I mean, I think he was just emulating those old cheesy videos from the early 60s where girls would kiss the monkeys or kiss the Beatles or something like that. I don't think he meant to be offensive at all, and I don't think he meant to make her feel like I don't think he meant to
like an object.
Make her feel uncomfortable.
Well, check the pictures, because there's pictures. I threw the link in the dingus so you guys can take a look at it.
Well, let me take
I'm assuming these are from the show. It doesn't look super like anyone is happy about it. I mean, really, that guy should have just been like cracked in the face with the base, and then.
Well, let me look at these pictures then.
And then he would have learned.
She looks clearly uncomfortable right there. I mean, yeah. There's one picture where she's got her hand up, she's trying to push him away. I mean,
his hands are around her neck.
I kind of got to take back what I said.
Yeah, he's got his hands kind of going around her neck a little too, so it's real forcible. I get what you're saying about the rape culture, but it definitely is still. Forced. It's really, really forced. It's not.
Yeah. Like, honestly, I thought like he just jumped up on stage and gave her a peck on the cheek, but that's not what's happening here. Like, he's grabbing her neck. Although her guitar player's like laughing, you know, that's weird. But
I think it happened so quick, he was probably still reacting to something else.
Yeah. Well, I take back after looking at these pictures, that guy should have been punched. I mean, he should be grabbing girls' necks, that's for sure.
I'm not saying he should be like, you know, eviscerated or anything, but like a good punch in the nose.
Honestly, I kind of think he should get the shit kicked out. Like I didn't realize he grabbed her neck.
When you look at those pictures, she is clearly uncomfortable.
There's a big difference between do you guys agree that there's a difference between giving a girl a peck on the cheek and grabbing her by the neck and like bending over her? That's a big
difference. I want to share one quick story. It happened at the same venue. Sam I Am played there 5 years ago, 5 years ago, 2009. Sam I Am, and when they did their like initial New York City show for the first time in I don't know how many years, a woman jumped on stage and hung out on stage for 10 minutes alongside, and was trying to kiss not Sergi, not the guitarist player Sergi, the other one. And was trying for about a good minute to 2 minutes before he finally kind of gave in and was like, all right, like it was really awkward. It was a really awkward makeout session that happened. And she was really trying to molest him on stage. And I don't remember if anyone did push her off or he eventually pushed her off, but I'm sure this dude jumped on and was like pushed off almost immediately. That woman was just hanging around him for a little bit and whatever. I didn't, you know, not to say that it's, you know, what's more right, what's more wrong, but just how everyone kind of was like, reacted differently where everybody was probably like with this guy. Oh, everyone with the woman was like, what's going on?
Yeah,
let's see what happens here.
I think there is a difference between men and women. Like people like to say men and women are exactly the same, but I don't think men and women are exactly the same. And I think, It's much more threatening for a guy that's bigger than a girl, like trying to kiss her, than some chick that's drunk or whatever, trying to kiss a guy on stage. Like, he's not really threatened by her. He might be grossed out, you know? But I mean, like, I think there's a palpable difference there.
And I have seen this woman a few years later, last year at Gaslight. They did a Red Bull Select show. She also managed to get on stage and say very inappropriate comments to Brian Fallon. Brian Fallon entertained her. And like sat her on the stage like thinking that she'd behave herself, and she didn't. So I believe it was the same woman. So if I see her at a show again, I'll snap the picture.
Well, fair enough. Let's do one more quick article, then we'll play a tune. Pup is on the Polaris Music Prize long list. It's a bit of a surprise, although not a total surprise. The Polaris Music Prize. Actually, Adam, why don't you handle this story? Because you're Canadian. It's a Canadian award.
Yes, I am. I'll also answer any questions you guys happen to have about Wolverine. So.
Is he the coolest X-Man?
So anyways, Pup, who's a punk band of Toronto, I like to bring up this piece of trivia because everyone around here knows it, but none of you Americans do. They used to be a band called Topanga, as in the Boy Meets World character. Anyways, Pup are included on the Polaris Music Prize long list. This is a critically selected list. They have kind of like this Illuminati of various Canadian music journalists that they bring together that decide on this every year. Former Punk News writer, editor, review guy, Ben Connolly was on the panel one year. I forget when, but he was. Anyways, though, so they're on the list. There's a bunch of other cool people that are on the list as well this year. You got Bri Webb of the Constantines. You have Pink Mountaintops, which have, they have a really cool record out that has like one incredibly lewd song. John, you'd like it for that reason. Mm. Owen Pallett, who used to play as, I think, was he playing as Final Fantasy? Is that what he was calling himself? I think he was. He plays violin. He's played with Arcade Fire a bunch of times. The Sadies and Chad Van Galen are on that list. You can find the whole list at the Polaris Prize website. So this puts pop, you know, little pop punk band up against, you know, the likes of Drake and the Arcade Fire. So it'll be interesting there. The short list, which was widows this down to 10, will be out on July 19th. So Pup released their self-titled full-length on Side One Dummy in the U.S. this year. It came out last year in Canada. Godspeed You Black Emperor won Polaris last year. And I guess really notably for us, Fucked Up won it in 2009, which was really funny because you'd see, like, you know, the CBC website up here in Canada, like our big news resource, was like, Canadian punk band wins big award, and like they tried to like get away with not having to put Fucked Up in the headline on a major news website, which was amusing. Yeah, so anyways,
they could do what MTV did and just say effed up.
Yeah,
isn't that what they did?
Yeah, I mean, I saw Fucked Up play some I don't know if I'm pretty sure it was in MTV Canada for a while, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure they played a show on MTV Canada. They referred to them as effed up, and then crowd surfers and people just tore up the stage at some point.
It was actually a bathroom. They played in a bathroom.
Yeah, I saw that.
Adam, I've got a question now.
Yes.
Can Wolverine's adamantium claw slice through Juggernaut's helmet?
You know, I've never been a fan of the idea that, like, Wolverine's claws had some sort of like magic, could slice through any matter thing, and I don't think that was the case, except that like the 90s X-Men cartoon, in the first episode of it, he like slices through a steel door as if like it's butter. And I remember even watching that when I was like 8 and going like, nah, that's not how those work. And then that's how it works, I guess. They can just slice through anything. I don't know.
Then you immediately became adult after that.
I did. It wrecked me. I'm like, ah.
Anyway, do you guys think Pup's going to win? What are the odds? Because effed up, I don't think people thought effed up would win, and they did. Will Pup win the award? They got to beat out Arcade Fire and Drake.
I don't think Arcade Fire really has a chance to win it. Only because, you know, it's a bunch of music critics that are actually deciding upon this thing. It's not based on sales or anything like that. And you got to figure, if you're a bunch of music critics, you know, Arcade Fire have had their time that you've given them in the limelight. You probably want to give it to someone else at this point. Like, this is one of these things that there's a lot of opinion that's going to actually feature into it. Actually, on the list too, John, Timber Timber. We talked about them on an episode a long time ago because I was trying to make up band names that sounded like indie bands, and that was the one. So, hey, they're on the list.
Did they pay you for that one?
I don't even know what that band sounds like. So, looking at the long list myself and not actually knowing a good 3/4 of these bands, I could totally see this going to someone like, I'm going to go Barca Berlat, who is a kind of folky singer-songwriter person. But it's the kind of person that I could totally see someone giving a whole ton of money to in one of these kind of competitions, just to be, you know, a little bit contrary to, like, look who beat the Arcade Fire. I'm going to go with that.
I think Drake's going to win. I think he really can use the recognition. He's pretty underrepresented.
I know.
Kind of underground.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one knows who he is, really.
Well, I hope Pup wins. I interviewed the main Pup guy. I forget his name. He was cool. They seem like cool dudes. They put out a good record. I hope they win.
We shall see.
All right. Adam, you got a hot tune for us?
Yeah, I got a bunch. Well, I have two, but two's a bunch. It's a bunch of, you know, minutes. Anyways, okay, so let's do one of these here. So first off, we have a new record that is coming out very soon. I'll have to actually figure this out with the Googles here. From the Steve Ademic Band out of Ottawa, Ontario. Steve Ademic used to play in a band that I really, really liked that was on Gearhead Records called the Million Dollar Marxists. But now he's releasing all these kind of great power pop records on Dirtnap. So the new record that they have coming out is called Dial Tone. It's out on July 1st, which is Canada Day. So it is soon to be available, and it's good fun. So anyways, this is a track from that one. So this is the Steve Ademic Band. The song is called Crash Course in Therapy.
Podcast. I was feeling that tune, boys. I'll tell you, I was down with the Steve Ademic Band. I'll tell you,
it's a summertime song.
Amazing,
it is. I do love the summertime tunes. I get flack in the punk community, but I love Sublime, man. I love the Police. I love the Summer Jams.
How can't you like the Police?
Well, Sting's kind of a dick.
But then we gotta bring up that argument again.
we argued about Sting once.
No, that thing just about, you know, Nars is a dick. Is it, you know, are they worth listening to?
Well, speaking of a band that may or may not be worth listening to, Alkaline Trio, Alkaline Trio, Alkaline Trio. They are doing 1, 2, 3 residencies. One residency in Los Angeles, one residency in Chicago, and one residency in Brooklyn. The residencies will be 4 shows over 4 nights. At each show, they will play 2, count them, 2 entire albums. But the catch is, you will not know which live albums they're going to play, which albums they're going to play in full, until you walk in the door. So if you want to hear any specific album live, you'll have to buy a ticket to all 4 shows, or you can gamble and hope you get a good one on one of the one nights you go. It runs through most of all October. The question is, boys, are people excited for this? It seems like they are. Do people just want to hear the old stuff? Will people be excited to hear the new stuff? Is the band kind of shooting themselves in the foot by saying, we're not going to tell you what you're going to get till you get there, and people are hoping for their favorite album, and they get their 3rd least favorite album and their least favorite album?
I think they're coasting, to be honest. This bums me out a lot. And I like the trio. And actually, when they did, I think it was about 8 years ago or 9 years ago, when they did the Goddamn It tour, and they played all of Goddamn It from front to back during their show. I made a trip to go see that, and it was a great show. But this whole idea about, we're not going to tell you what we're playing until you show up, and, you know, we might do this, we might not do that, who knows? To me, it's kind of a cash grab, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm looking at the dates, and they're doing 4 dates in 3 different cities, and it's just kind of like, yeah, fans, just show up, and we might play that record you want to hear, and if not, you're kind of stuck with it. And I don't know. I think it's kind of disrespectful. And I like full album shows also. I really like the idea of playing it front to back, and I like the whole idea about revisiting that era. But let people know what they're getting ready to see before they show up, and don't make them play a lottery to be able to see the things they want to be able to see.
Yeah, I'm kind of lukewarm. I'm a fan as well. I'm kind of lukewarm about that. I missed the goddamn it tour, so I was a little, you know, every time people talk about that, I get a little upset. I don't know why.
You're
I
like,
missed it.
God damn it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just punching the computer and everything. But then also, the fact that at least here in Brooklyn, I'm pretty sure it was the same thing for Chicago and LA. You couldn't buy a 4-pack of tickets for better or for worse. And, you know, so even if you maybe wanted to go to all four, just because maybe you wanted to hear several of their albums and maybe a few of the other ones you would have sat through anyway. That wasn't really a choice. So I only managed to get tickets. I don't know for which date, for one date though. So, I mean, I'd like out of all, I think there's 8 they're going to be doing, you know, 6 of them I'd be fine with. And then 2 of them I'd be like, eh. And I love on
the most recent two.
Actually, I like the most recent two, believe it or not. I wasn't a fan of Crimson or Agony and Irony, really. But the most recent two was more of a return to form a little bit, but it didn't blow me away. But, you know, it had some good jams, you know. I don't know. I mean, I know I'm in the minority on that. But I do like on the thread for Punk News, it turned into another rate your favorite album kind of thing going on. So I thought that was interesting. And it was funny how many people, you know, how it changed the top album. You know how there's bands where people totally agree on one album, that this is their album, and then everything else is kind of debatable? This thread of people just can't seem to agree on the same album that they really like. You know, that I found was interesting. Am I the only one going to this also? I guess I am.
I've heard maybe 3 Alkaline Trio songs that I can remember.
Oh, okay.
One I can name.
What is that one?
Jaked on Green Beers.
Oh, that's good stuff.
So I know that one, which is like a B-side, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it was on a comp. That's why I know it. Yeah. Actually, and I know everything that's on their split with Hot Water Music, but that was, some of those songs were Hot Water Music songs.
So then you know Radio, which Hot Water Music did.
But I only know it as a Hot Water Music song.
Yeah.
Which funny. Therefore, I love, if
and,
I heard
and,
it.
And I love that version of the
it,
song.
But if I hear it not played by Chuck, I'm going to be like, this isn't Chuck. And then I'm not going to like it. Alkaline Trio. People like them. That's how I would build them if I was a publicist. Alkaline Trio, people like them. I don't, but hey.
Yeah, I agree. I can't get into this band. It's just too, the vocals are too clean for me. It's just, I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm just not into this band. But I'll tell you, I'm a huge fan of residencies. I saw the Melvins do a residency once. They did like 6 residencies. They, over 2 nights, they did 5 full albums. And they like mixed all the albums around. They played them in like different order and stuff. And it was one of the best concerts I've ever seen. So if you're down with the Alkaline Trio, I don't think they're trying to bilk people on this. Like, I don't think they're trying to say, how can we make as much money as possible? I think they really are doing this as like a gift to the fans. I think hardcore fans would enjoy this. The secretiveness of it, I don't quite get to. I guess they're trying to surprise people, but I think that's going to backfire. They're just going to disappoint more people than will be into it. But only time will tell. Speaking of people being disappointed, as you guys may have known, recently the Pope excommunicated the Mafia. Therefore, with the Mafia excommunicated from the church, YouTube has taken upon itself to become the world's foremost leader in extortion. What do I mean by that? Here's what's happening. Apparently unwilling to deal with artists like the Black Keys and labels like Prosthetic Records, who withheld music from Spotify over low royalty rates, Google's YouTube will block music videos from independent artists who don't also sign up for the streaming services. According to The Guardian, independent artists could disappear from YouTube in a matter of days after the Google Video Service confirmed it was dropping content from independent labels that have not signed up for its upcoming music subscription services. So I gotta say, I was complaining about technology earlier. This is what happens when you make yourself dependent on a privately run technology company. They see, like, and there's the old thing is, if you're not paying anything, you're not a customer. What's the old phrase? If you're using something for free, you're not a customer. You're the product. And that's precisely what we're like. So many people relied on YouTube and Google, and they were like, yeah, you can do whatever you want here. And now all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're changing the tune and let you pay us money. And I think we're going to see a lot of more of this in stuff like Facebook and stuff like Twitter. I think you're going to see tons of this. And I think we're entering a scary digital age, to tell you the truth.
See, looking at this is evidence to me of the fact that Google, and this is always evident when Google does things. Google is really good at technology, but they're not really good at people. So what probably happened here, so looking at this like with my developer hat on, is so people internal to Google who are very smart engineers, they went and they're going to go, okay, we're going to build a music streaming service and it's going to be great. So they're starting to assemble this thing. And then they go, hey, we have all of this audio content because of YouTube. So wouldn't it be cool if the music that was already on YouTube, that we were already tracking royalty payments from, could be plugged right into our new streaming service. So that way, if, you know, artist X has this rare song on YouTube, it'll be available to people using our streaming service. Great idea. So they sat down and they engineered a solution to make that happen. And then as the byproduct of that, it was like, well, that means if people don't put their stuff on YouTube, well, then it can't flow through into our streaming service. So I have a feeling that this has a lot less to do, and I'm not defending them, this has a lot less to do with Google being nefarious and more to do, I think, with Google being an engineering-driven company that does not think about how all of this stuff actually plays when, like, humans get a hold of the news. Not that they're right or anything like that, or not that, like, they're totally innocent, but I have a feeling that's what happens. Because they do this kind of shit all the time, is where Google will make decisions that make total sense if you completely take people out of it. But once you put people in it, it's kind of questionable. Like Google Plus. Google Plus is a fantastically engineered technology product, but Google's frustrated because people won't use it. Well, people won't use it because their friends and family aren't hanging out in Google Plus. They're over on Facebook. And so Google's solution may have been, you know, a great piece of technology, but they totally ignored the fact that, hey, people aren't on Facebook because it's a great piece of technology. People are on Facebook because that's where everyone else is. And it's just, this to me seems to be in line with that, where Google just does not get, like, how human beings operate.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying with that. But at the same time, even though Facebook's like the thing of the moment in terms of where people would hang out, I'm just getting away from the story a little bit. You kind of have to, like, Facebook, you know, what did it supplant? MySpace? And what did MySpace supplant? Like Friendster or something like that? So kind of, I guess they were hoping to catch on the next big thing. It didn't quite catch yet because it required people to do a little more than hit a like button or upload a photo or something. So, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's part of it. As for the streaming service, I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't even know that they were trying to introduce a streaming service. So I guess look at it this way in terms of, I didn't know they were going to introduce a streaming service, but now I know that there's a possibility that they won't allow certain people who don't pay to join. They might block them. That's kind of like already behind the eight ball. It's kind of already a negative thing. So I think they maybe, like you were saying, Adam, should have thought about how to roll this out and maybe take some extra time to kind of iron out anything that may be a hiccup in terms of negativity, and that's definitely one of it. So, I mean, I kind of understand what you're saying. I definitely have a view like that as well.
It's just one of these, like, Google sticks foot in mouth by, you know, making dumb tech decisions that don't act. They don't actually think about how that's going to, like, play to the masses.
I honestly disagree with you guys. I could be wrong. You guys are both much more wise to the tech side than I am. But and I'm definitely more anti-technology than you guys are, maybe too much so. But it seems,
I pretend to be wise. I'm not really wise.
It seems to me this is clearly Google trying to strong-arm small artists. They're basically saying, if you don't agree to our rates, which are far, far below, you know, radio royalties or what your music's actually worth, we'll just block you entirely from the internet. How about that? And I think that's what it is. I think it's Google being, I mean, I don't say evil, but evil. I think this can be a valuable opportunity for independent artists, though. If this really does become a big impact, I would recommend and I would hope that independent artists, you know, it seemed like Bandcamp seems pretty cool. I could be wrong. But, you know, flock to areas like Bandcamp and make those websites. And actually, Bandcamp, why don't you become the less evil YouTube? So you become the spot where people go to music instead of YouTube. Because I admit, when I'm looking for rare and obscure music that I want to check out, I go to YouTube. I wouldn't if I didn't have to. So I hope another service or artists themselves are able to maybe use this as a way to splinter off from Google. And it's not like it's going to affect Google. I mean, let's be real. as for music streaming, they make their money from the big hits. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. Off is not bringing in the big bucks for Google. You know, Andrew Jackson Jihad is not bringing in the big bucks for Google. Although I did see an Andrew Jackson Jihad commercial on YouTube the other day, which was weird. The point is that I think Google is just being despicable here, and I hope artists are smart enough, and I hope the fans trust the artists enough to find an alternative venue to showcase music online.
Well, John, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mark. Okay, I just want to jump in really quick before we move on to another thing, because I wanted to echo something that Chris had said, is that really before this story came out, I was never aware, and maybe this tells you how out of touch I am, but I was never aware that Google was getting ready or trying to launch a streaming service. And so when the story came out, I guess about a week ago or so, I was kind of surprised. And much like what John is saying right now, I felt like Google was being evil and kind of strong-arming these artists and trying to do their bidding, so to speak. Personally, I think it was young Rudy Frankel that made the comment on the story when it posted.
Oh, that 9-year-old that hangs around Punk News?
Exactly. It steals beers from his mom. He made a comment where he said something about he wants to own his music, and I totally back that. I'm still on the side of I've not bought into the streaming services, and I know it's the way of the future, and maybe it's just old man me, but I'm still a firm backer of get the vinyl, get the download, get the CD, get something, but I want to physically own my music, because when something happens to the internet or to my computer, I want to know that I've got the music that I paid for.
Well, I agree 100%, and I think as a culture, we're moving towards becoming a renter society instead of an owner society, and I think
which I don't like.
I think that's incredibly foolish, and actually, if you look at systems of economies, it shows that it's incredibly foolish. You know, if you're renting all your music, they can change the terms anytime they want, and there's nothing you can do about it. So listen, kids, buy the fizz, take it home, enjoy it, artists get paid. And tell Google to go, well, you know what to tell Google to do. Speaking of a guy that told someone else to go, you know, do what? Jello Biafra pulled out of Amnesia Rock Fest. Why, you say? Well, Amnesia Rock Fest was a little bit unusual. Oh, Adam, I have a closing word on Google, did you?
No, I want to talk about Jello.
Yeah, Jello was booked for Amnesia Rock Fest. The weird thing was that he was booked the same day it's unclear if he was booked the same day or different days than the Dead Kennedys. Of course, there's a huge beef, one of the biggest beefs in music now between Jello and the modern incarnation of the Dead Kennedys. So when Jello saw that he was booked at Amnesia Rock Fest with the Dead Kennedys, well, his band and also the Dead Kennedys were booked at Amnesia Rock Fest, he pulled out. Here's what Jello said. We were supposed to play Amnesia Rock Fest, and the promoter, for some reason, thought it would be a real cool idea to book us and the fake Dead Kennedys on the same day and not tell either party that the other was on the bill. It especially leaves a bad taste in my mouth because this promoter pushed our booking agent for us to confirm clear back in November, and we did. For people wondering why we're not at Amnesia Rock Fest after the initial press release said that we and the Dead Kennedys were both playing, well, that's the reason. So, a lot of arguments on both sides here. A lot of people said Jello should have just kept on trucking. A lot of people said Jello did the right thing by sticking to his guns. What do you guys think of Jello pulling out from Amnesia Rock Fest?
This is like on a cartoon where like you lock both people that don't like each other in a room, and then they just have to just like air their grievances, and then they become friends. That's what they're trying. That's what the promoter's trying to do here. It's like cartoon human relations.
I mean, is anyone really surprised? Did anyone not see this coming?
I actually remember on a previous podcast we were like, "Wow, Danzig and the Misfits on the same bill, Henry and Flag, Jello and the Dead Kennedys." You're absolutely right.
I mean, come on, come on, really? I don't know. I was surprised. Oh, whatever. I'm lost for words.
Maybe I'm kind of naive about the way these shows or these festivals get booked, but wasn't this booked like in November? Didn't he say that they were hassling his manager about this in November?
Jello said that back in November, the manager asked them to clear that time so they could be at Amnesia Rock Fest.
Okay, and it's June, and did he just cancel it right now? Was this canceled a long time ago?
It's been canceled for a little while. No one knows exactly when it was canceled, but actually, I can tell you. I believe it or not, I just stumbled across something on Punk News. Jesse of Alternate Tentacles said that Jello canceled. So it was at least a few weeks ago. It wasn't like yesterday.
Because it seems to me that if it's been 7 months at this point, I mean, they don't know who's playing on the show. And if it's that big of a deal, why wouldn't they have checked it out last November? I mean, personally, Jello, play the show. It's not like you're playing with the dead Kennedys. It's not like you have to associate with them or anything like that. Just do the damn show. I personally, and John, I know that you're a big Jello fan, but personally, I just feel like he's milking this whole rift between him and the dead Kennedys a bit to the ground.
I agree and I disagree. I agree that he's milking the rift between him and the dead Kennedys. And after a certain point, you got to be like, all right, you know, just get over it. But I actually support Jello in this decision for two reasons. The first, I'm not sure that I totally support him on it. But the second, I definitely support him on it. The first reason is Jello has a certain code of ethics that he goes by. And from what I can tell, like, a lot of punk bands talk trash and other punk bands and other people for, you know, not walking the walk. But those punk bands themselves, you know, are totally hypocritical. And I would say there are far more hypocritical punk bands that talk a tough game but don't even live up close to it than bands that do live up to what they say. But I would say from interviewing Jello multiple times, from following Alternative Tentacles for 10 years, from being a huge Jello fan, Jello talks a tough game, but Jello walks the walk. That is, he has a very severe code of ethics that he lives by, but he does live by them, what he says. And all, I mean, also with Jello, is he talks a tough game, but you won't see him talking trash on people that don't walk as the strict line that he walks. He actually seems pretty forgiving and pretty open to other ideas and cultures and ideals on what punk rock is. So the point is Jello talks a tough game. So if he feels that this violates his ethics, I support him 100% for not playing. But I doubly support him for this. But on the other hand, like, it's like, well, you're letting down the fans. The fans want to see it. But the second reason is he's not letting down the fans. Here's what really happened. He got rope-a-doped into playing a show that the promoter knew he wouldn't play if he told him the dead Kennedys were on it, right?
Okay, but then why did...
Hold on, let me finish. So he knows he's rope-a-doping him, right? So, and the promoter makes money off the show. So why should Jello work for the promoter or get the promoter money when he like lied to him or tricked him or conned him or rope-a-doped him into doing something he didn't want to do? That's just a sucker. So of course Joe's not going to play because the guy tried to be a wise guy and sneak one past him. So why should he get any money? Why back Jello on that decision?
Well, I mean, you can take that point of view, but at the same time, like he said, I mean, they agreed to this last November, and this was just, I mean, from what you just said, this was canceled in the last few weeks. I mean, 7 months we're talking about. If the bands that he's playing with on a festival bill are so important to him, then why isn't he making sure last November that he knows which bands he's playing with and who he approves of and who he doesn't, and not agree to it in the first place?
Well,
I think to say that we're going to play this show and my band is going to play this show, because there's absolutely nothing that said that he was reunited with the dead Kennedys or anything like that. It was very clearly two separate bands that were playing. If he had such a problem with it, then why didn't he pull his band from that show and never worry about it in the first place? It just really seemed – it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Also, wasn't the show booked – I mean, not only was it like in terms of November, in terms of booking it, the actual flyer, I believe, didn't it come out in February or March? So you still had a few months even after it was announced to the public to make a decision as quick as you could. And it seems like if you're going to kind of wait until almost the concert, which was last weekend or something, then
I think you guys might be incorrect, because they claimed to announce the complete lineup in April, which really wasn't that long ago. But it looks like on their press release for the complete lineup, Jello's there, but dead Kennedys are not.
I could have sworn they were both there.
Let me take another look there.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
It's not Jello's job to like scour over like – obviously, the promoter's got to know Jello and DK have a beef, right? And actually, it's clearly knows it because he booked Misfits and Danzig and Henry and Black Flag and Jello and DK. So he knows what he's doing, right?
Yeah.
And he knows they've got a beef, obviously. So if he was a responsible promoter, he would have been like, yo, listen, I'm going to book DK. It's not fair for him to put the burden on Jello in a festival of this size where things are eked out. He should have let Jello know ahead of time. So I think that the promoter was trying to earn extra dollars from just the mere fact that these bands were playing together, and I think that's lame. I think he should have been up front. Clearly he would not have been wrong to say, Jello, DK are going to be there too. Just want to make sure that's cool with you. That's not morally wrong. Is it morally wrong to not let Jello know? Maybe, maybe not. So why did he take the safer route unless he was trying to pull a quick one?
Okay, let me ask you this, though. How often do festival promoters run their lineups by other bands. I mean, how often do festival promoters say, hey, listen, I know you played with this band and you guys broke up 5 years ago, but just so you know, they're going to be on the bill also.
But he's clearly setting up like the beef matches. He's clearly setting up Danzig and Misfits, Henry and Black Flag, Cello and Dead Kennedys. If the guy had two cents of common sense about him, did I just make that phrase up? 2 cents of common sense. If he had two cents of wit about him, especially with Jello, if he's booking Jello, he knows who Jello is, so he's going to know there's going to be a conflict.
I think we're going to agree to disagree on this one, because I think that if he's looking to book Jello and he knows that he's booking a punk show or a big rock show or whatever you want to call it, he's looking for the names that he's putting on there, and he might not exactly know the exact history between them. I mean, and I agree. I mean, I'm an old fan, and I know who the Dead Kennedys were and Jello and all that kind of stuff. And he might be an older guy too, and it's very, very possible that he might be trying to pit these entities against them, like you're saying. But there's also the very real possibility, because we don't know, that he's like, I'm trying to get as many bands together for this as I can, and I know these are names that fans are going to want to see.
Well, I think we just have to agree to disagree, because I think the promoter was trying to pull a quick one. And let's see here. Anyways, Mark, I think you've got a tune for us to play, so you can have the final word on this with your tune.
Oh, yeah, right on. This is a local band, actually, from down here in South Florida. It's a band called Die Trying. And the guitar player, Los, he describes this song as being about a prostitute and her daily struggles. If anybody goes by this this street corner down in Miami, 79th and Biscayne, it's kind of a sketchy area. And this talks about the shit her son has to deal with, pretty much what you would see, in his words, what you would see if you drive down 79th and Biscayne. So without further ado, this is Die Trying in 79th and Biscayne.
Trying with an upbeat track about a prostitute's mother, or no, a prostitute and her child. I hope that was real uplifting for you guys.
Speaking all of street, all street punk is uplifting.
So, oh, that was classic. I love street punk. Big street punk fan.
You're breaking the illusion that we're listening to the songs live here.
We were.
I was rocking along, man.
Like,
oh, that was street punk. Oh, yeah.
Listen, if you guys are into Rancid, you'll dig these guys. Listen, they're great.
You know how some people that claim they're like super not racist, they don't even see race. Well, I'm super non-genre-ist. So when I hear a song, I don't even think of what genre it is. I just hear the song.
Ah.
Speaking of a song a lot of people are excited for, Gaslight Anthem. They've announced the tour, a new album, and a track list. The new album is going to be called Get Hurt, And the cover is an upside-down heart, which a lot of people said looked like a hymen, and I don't disagree. Are you guys excited for the new Gaslight Anthem album? Has the Gaslight Anthem train rolled on? Is the band still a viable force in the punk rock community? Is the band still a viable force in the general music community? Are people excited? Is Gaslight Anthem going to keep rolling along, or has the train run out of steam?
My wife's excited. I can't say I'm necessarily excited. I could say that everyone has that band that they saw in the basement and then blew up. So I guess this is my band that I saw in the basement for $5 with 30 people. And now they're playing PNC Bank Art Center over here in New Jersey. And it's like $30 to $90 for tickets in a seated arena. So that's kind of weird. And from the teaser video they released, I haven't gotten anything else. From the teaser video they released, sounds like they're going bold with their sound and I guess just trying to get as mainstream as possible, which is, I guess, a pattern they've been doing for a while. So a force of the punk rock community, that ship has long sailed. And I guess some people argue, were they ever punk rock in the first place? I don't understand the album art at all. I mean, for the fact that they're on a major label and been around and has some buzz, I mean, no one could come up with anything better. Nothing.
Yeah, it's kind of crappy.
And nothing. I mean, that's just like, let's just open MS Paint and put an upside down heart and put a title on top. Like, I could have did that in 5 minutes. I mean,
someone at some point said, you know what? If we just like pull this art out of our butt in like 10 minutes, we could use all of that art budget for like a bigger bus.
I mean,
and they were like, yeah, bigger bus sounds great. I want bigger bus. So,
I mean, I just, no. I mean, I don't know. You know, that teaser seems like they're going for the bar rock crowd now. Maybe.
Am I sensing some Gaslight hate now?
For me?
From everybody.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't.
Chris, you're talking hate, Chris. You are definitely on the hate train on this one.
No, I'm not.
On the hate train on this one.
Is this band like 6 years ago was the Org's darling?
Oh God, I mean that the first album and the buzz in the beginning was great. It's just I kind of long for those days. It ain't happening now. So
I'll get on the hate train for this. Thank you for opening the door for me. No, I don't actually wish this band any ill will. I think you're right that the ship has sailed on them, you know, doing anything that's really going to impact, I think, the punk scene. I mean, they've been, you know, cultivating like bar rock probably wasn't a bad descriptor. I don't think it's even necessarily meant to be an insulting one. Like, they have a sound, and even when they first came out and people in the punk scene were really about them, they clearly had a sound that would play well in mainstream. And so much so to the point that, like, if they didn't go that route, then, you know, what are they doing? That's a bad career move. They should be going mainstream. You know, they've been on that road. They're continuing on that road. You know, all the power to them. I think, you know, they're absolutely great group of people that could happen to, so I wish them well with it. It's still nothing that I really want to listen to. I find myself sort of ambivalent to the Gaslight Anthem. It's not kind of like snarky ambivalence like with the Alkaline Trio, where I think that a lot of people that are into them are sort of nuts. I wish the Gaslight Anthem well. I just probably will never hear this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've been accused of being on the hate train or whatever, but yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Adam, on the sense that it didn't take them long for really to try. Like, I didn't feel Sink or Swim had a mainstream edge to it. I feel like there was an edge that definitely appealed to people here at the Org. People love the 59 sound, and I was one of the few people that just kind of shrugged my shoulders and was like, why is everybody going crazy for this? And ever since then, I've enjoyed a little bit here and there, like the occasional thing they put out, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like from Brian Fallon's statement too, I don't have it in front of me, but it sounds like from his statement that when he says that they're going for it, that they're just really trying to, you know, really break into the mainstream in terms of, like, I think you could talk to some people and they'll know who the Gaslight Anthem is, but they're really trying to go for more of the household name. business.
Well, I mean, like, let's say you tune into like your local like modern rock station, and they're playing like, you know, they have a choice of all kinds of like horrible bands that I don't even know the name of that they're gonna play, or then they're gonna play a block of stuff that involves like, I don't know, like the Foo Fighters, say, and the Gaslight Anthem or something before they break for commercial. It's purely like inoffensive, but it's like, you know, good inoffensive. Yeah. In a way, like they're not hopping on any, you know, bizarre 16-year-old trend or anything like that. Like they're not doing something that, you know, if you hear it in 10 years is going to be, you know, completely embarrassing or eye rolling to the people that were into it. So, you know what, as far as like a mainstream rock band goes, you know, you could do way worse than the Gaslight Anthem. So, you know, take up that spot.
Are you saying Chiodios is not going to be something 40-year-olds listen to?
I don't even know how to pronounce that. So no.
Well, that's all I got.
That was awesome.
Well, speaking of things 40-year-olds listen to, the Hate Train, unfortunately, after missing the train many, many times and finding my way back from the station, got to get on the Hate Train on this one. Got to get my Hate Train ticket punched by the conductor. Morrissey, not only has he canceled his tour, which in many places has been 4 cancellations in a row. I believe in Chicago, he canceled 4 shows in a row over the past 4 or 5 years. Not only did he cancel like this, the last third of his entire tour, but he apparently blamed opening act Christine Young for getting him sick. When Christine Young saw that the Morrissey camp was blaming her for getting him sick, she went on her own Facebook and basically posted that she had allergies and did not have like a flu or anything, and that she did not get Morrissey sick, and that he asked her to leave the tour. Then after that, Jesse Tobias of Morrissey fired back at Christine Young, and somehow famed producer Tony Visconti got drawn into the fray, where it was stated, "Good riddance to false friends." So the Morrissey tour did not end well. Lots of canceled dates. Morrissey and his crew now hate the former producer Tony Visconti, who has also produced Bowie and many, many, many of Mata Hoople, many other wonderful acts. And Christine Young has been accused. They're blaming Christine Young for destroying the tour by getting other people sick when she says she just had seasonal allergies, which of course is not communicable. The question is, boys, is Morrissey out of free passes? As people know, John Gentile says, when people are famous, when they create very great, exceptional art, you get a number of free passes. Not that he's used any, but Jesse Michaels is certainly entitled to free passes. Danzig is certainly entitled to free passes. Morrissey is one of the greatest lyricists of all time. Great singer, great artist, but I think he ran out of free passes about 2 or 3 canceled tours ago. This is lame. It's whack. I mean, seriously, it is babyish to blame the opening act for ruining your tour. Give me a break.
Okay, let me just say right now, before I start talking, that I'm dipping my buffalo chicken tender into some ranch sauce right now, and it is delicious. Morrissey, if you're listening, I am really happy that Miami is the city that brought Morrissey down. I have never understood the appeal of Morrissey. And my college roommate, who's one of my best friends, and he's getting married this weekend, as a matter of fact, was a huge this fan and a huge Morrissey fan, and I was exposed to that guy daily for a couple of years, and I've just never ever understood his appeal, and just as the years go on, I just find him worse and worse and more curmudgeonly and more curmudgeonly, and I oh god, he just needs to go away. I'm over it.
Should we turn this into can we think of more self-absorbed people? I mean, someone consistently canceling tours. Could we even think of anyone who consistently cancels tours like Morrissey does?
No, like seriously, like he's like, as far as big, like it costs a lot of money to cancel big tours. Like in some ways I feel bad for him, because like one time his mom was sick, another time he had like intestinal problems. So, but I mean, like after a while it's like, come on. But now he's blaming the opening act. Like, come on, like, be a man, you know? And when I say be a man, I mean, like, own up to your own shit. Like, if you can't finish the tour, say, oh, I can't do it. Don't blame some girl that's got, like, 2,500 likes on Facebook which is not that. I mean, honestly, just own up to it. Be a man. Don't try to pass your problems off on other people.
But John, don't you understand? This boy has a thorn in his side.
Yes.
The statement is beautiful. It's like random capitalization all throughout. Please eat louder.
Oh my God. And the statement by the guitar player, Jesse Tobias, formerly of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, by the way.
Sure about that?
Yeah, he played with the Chili Peppers for a little while, I think, when right after Frusciante had left. And it reads like something that a fan of Morrissey's would have written to some fan chat website, Morrissey punk news type thing or whatever. It's just
I love the weasel quotes around the word Facebook every time it comes up.
Oh my God. It's really bad. It's oh God.
No, and just like good riddance to false friends. It's like, my God, would you please, you're a middle-aged musician playing guitar for a really, really sad, sad man. Stop it.
But how else do you win Morrissey's approval? You must move.
Honestly, like this is a whack statement, but let's be real. Morrissey is definitely this dude's meal ticket, you know?
Well, ever since he had to put his shirt on after leaving the Chili Peppers, I guess so.
Adam, I think you had something insightful to say, as you always do.
No, I really don't. there is no insight that can be brought to this.
I just got to say, it's quite babyish. It's quite infantile to blame the opening act for your sickness. Be a man. Honestly, be a man and power through the tour. You know, do you think Joey Shithead of DOA would quit because he got a cold from the opening act, if that even did happen?
Joey Shithead would be giving the opening act colds.
You can think of tours where people broke limbs or went to the hospital or bands that flipped their van, had their shit stolen. You know, I mean, I understand those may be smaller bands, but I mean, yeah, really, this is no.
Yeah, make it happen. Exactly.
I'm still a fan of his music, but you can't defend this. This is whack. And let's close out tonight's podcast with a announcement that has a lot of people puzzled. Some people are down. Some people are not down. Cassette Store Day 2014 has been announced. It's basically the same as Record Store Day, except for instead of releasing limited edition cassettes. I mean, except for releasing limited edition records, they're releasing limited edition cassettes. But it still takes place in record stores. It's being spearheaded in the U.S. I think it actually started as an English organization, but it's being spearheaded in the U.S., by Burger Records out in California, who released a lot of cassettes by bands that we like, by Off, La Sera, Red Cross, a lot of those kinds of bands. Cassette Store Day is September 27th, and here's what Burger Records said. Burger Records loves tapes. We've built our foundation on the forgotten format and have been preaching the merits of warm analog cassette culture for years. We're honored to be ambassadors of Cassette Store Day 2014 and the good old USA. We plan to bring some of our favorite labels to the table and invite everyone to the party and partake in the fun phenomenon of releasing top shelf music on cassette tapes and pop culture today. And actually, if you want to be a part of it, if you're a cassette label, it's quite easy. You just got to send in like $15. And I think you can actually get distribution just by sending in $15, which is actually on cassettes. That's quite a useful tool to have.
Yeah, I mean it hasn't blown up to where you're having $25 cassettes yet. Give it time. I'm not necessarily hating on this. I'm not gonna hate on it, because if people are all about cassettes, fine. But I just don't understand. I was real adamant about cassettes while when the CD bubble was getting huge. Also because I was younger and it was cheaper to convince my parents to buy me cassettes. But really, I mean, just the idea of always having to unwind the cassette out of my Walkman or car radio that it could get easily destroyed, it just always just seemed cheap. And I don't know. I mean, I just don't understand this like fervent appeal back to cassettes. I don't get it.
You see, I don't understand it either. And it's not like I really, even if it was a band I really liked, and I'm faced with this every once in a while, I really can't see myself buying a cassette. Like, not only do I not have anywhere to play it, but I don't even know if I would. And at that point, it's just like a a weird trinket that I bought, and I'd probably rather spend that money on something else. But that said, I was at a thing the other day, and there was a guy there that had like a cassette label that he was doing, and he had a table full of cassettes, and they had like, you know, they made them at home, and they just had to like record each of those suckers in real time because they didn't have the right equipment for it and everything. And I was just like, you know what? Godspeed, you crazy cassette bastards. Go right ahead. I'm okay with them. I am totally
no,
not.
No, tell us what you're really thinking. You're really thinking, you know what? No. You're really thinking that.
Well, I'm like, I'm not going to buy one, and I would not start a cassette label. But then, like, I'm also going to not, like, run with the bulls in Spain. So some people do. If that's what they want to do, hey, cool. That's all right. They could be doing worse things.
I'm just waiting for the 8-track revival.
I gotta say, man, I like cassettes. My favorite format is the CD because it doesn't degrade and it sounds great. I like records too, though, but I like cassettes too. And here's why. And I said this a couple of times before: is I've gotten into a lot of awesome bands because cassettes are so cheap to produce. Like cassette labels sell cassettes for like $4, $5, or $6. Like Burger Records and Baldy Longhair Records. Like I got into the Crazy in the Brains that way. I got a cassette for $5. Awesome, awesome band. I got into Nobody that way, $5 cassette. Because honestly,
and those guys were great a couple weeks ago, by the way. That's the first time I heard them. They were great.
I mean, they're definitely a cool band. I don't really care about digital. Like, I mean, I'll get digital if it's the only option I have. But it's like, I just don't feel it has no value to me. It's like, it's on my iPod. Maybe I'll get to it, maybe I don't. But I like having something in my hands and looking at the art and reading the credits and hearing the thing play. So I like cassettes in that it's $5 for a cassette. I mean, it's ridiculous if a cassette is like more than $5 or $6. But for me, $5 or $6 is the exact why not check it out price point if it looks cool. There's very little to have me not buy an album as if it's $5 and it looks cool. I've gotten to so many bands away. I've gotten to The Rain Cats, The Hound of Love, Mean Jeans. And also, like with cassettes, is we'll also put like exclusives or B-sides. Like there's a bunch of Lacera cassettes with rare demos on them. The Crazy in the Brains cassette has like 15 rare tracks on it. Off sometimes hides rare tracks on their cassettes. So for $5, I am down with the cassette, man. I wouldn't say it's the greatest format, but for $5, it's fun and not that big of a deal. And I don't understand why people hate it so much. I think people really express vitriol about it because there's a part of them that likes it. Because I mean, like, let's say somebody's juggling. I don't care about juggling, but if I saw somebody juggling, I wouldn't be like, "That's stupid. I hate you. You shouldn't do that." Like, I don't care, you know. So I don't understand why people that don't listen to cassettes get so angry when they hear people listen to cassettes. I don't know. I think you're cool.
I think for me is that like, it's pretty low on the list of like various things that I think you could do with $5. Like, let's say for $5 instead of a cassette, you got like an MP3 download card and a sandwich. Like,
you could have physical format sandwich.
You get your music and you get a sandwich, which is, hey, everyone wants a sandwich, right? So
wait, if you're getting a sandwich, does that mean someone's breaking up?
You get a sandwich, right? So it's a pretty good idea.
Adam, I'm not trying to be a dick here, but if I got a download card and a sandwich or a cassette, I would take the cassette because once you eat the sandwich, it's gone. But I'll always have the cassette.
But we know where this is going. And back, you know, back in the day, you'd have your cheap 7-inch, and that's how you got into, you know, you checked out a new band. Hey, check out the 7-inch, and it, you know, it was like what, like $2 or $3 back in the day. You could pick up a 7-inch. But now with the cassettes coming back, initially they're going to be cheap. But I just feel like that, and I'm not again. If people want to enjoy cassettes, enjoy them. But you could just see this turning into like where people are just collecting it more for the sense that it's just limited and just to have more than to appreciate the actual format. And that alone will drive the, you know, the price point is what, you know, what you and other people enjoy up. And then, you know, it's just kind of just going to blow up. I don't know. I mean, that's just how I feel that it's just more about the limited physical product and, oh, yeah, this is cool, novelty. And it's, oh, I have all these cassettes. What do I do with them? You know, I remember selling most of my cassettes for like 50 cents or a dollar back in like 2000. And I felt like I was the last person to sell my cassettes, you know, amongst all my friends. So I don't know.
I think that's quite wise, Chris. I think that's a great way to close up the podcast. Adam White, do you have a tune to give us an end cap on our driving our powerful cassette and Morrissey discussion.
I have something from the cassette era for us to use here. Actually, well, you guys have a choice. So it was a really nice weekend. I was sitting out on the deck with a beverage, doing some work in the sun, and it was nice. And I was listening to Teenage Head, which is, if you're Canadian,
nice.
If you're Canadian, Teenage Head, 1979, that self-titled record that had come out was, you know, that was one of the punk records, especially in this area. They're from Hamilton, Ontario, which is, you know, 30 minutes up the street from here. And I was super into it. So I'm going to play a Teenage Head song because I want to. Now, we could play a Teenage Head song from their 1979 debut, or we could play a song they recorded in 2003 with Marky Ramone when they were hanging out with Marky Ramone. Ooh. That is a re-recording of one of those. So do we want to go... Both? This is a really long podcast. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we should save one. This is a tough call. I think we should take a vote. That's what I think.
Well, you first.
Me? Ooh. Ooh. Marky Ramone drums. He doesn't sing.
Marky Ramone's probably singing.
He's singing?
I think so.
I vote for Marky Ramone.
He might be. I'm not quite sure.
Got Let's it. Do it.
If Marky's singing, I'm old school Teenage Head.
Hold on here. I'm not quite... I'm gonna Google this.
Adam, just play something.
I mean, I would say go with the OG since we were talking about the cassette era.
Let's do the OG. We got three for OG. We'll hit up Marky Ramone a little bit later.
All right. OG. Fine. Original. Okay, cool. So, anyways, this is off Teenage Head's self-titled record, 1979. This is Bone Rack.
Girls.
was Teenage Head without Marco Ramone. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast. Adam White, thank you for firing up the hate train and keep throwing in that coal as we ran down Morrissey and Cassette and everybody else along the track.
I wasn't trying to do that.
Mark Little, thanks for the sandwich-based pun. It went out there and it just kind of hung out there. People appreciated it without diving in.
I hope somebody out there got it.
And Chris Barrett, thank you for your wise, should I say, Yoda-ish words concerning the future of cassettes. I hope the cassette industry heeds your warnings, your prognostications, and avoids the self-implosion that we once saw with 7-inch records.
Visit my website, Drudge Report.
This is Punk News Podcast. Thanks for listening. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Danzig. Happy birthday to you. Go!